Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's SearchWindowsServer.com podcast. I'm Brendan Knoyer, site editor of SearchWindowsServer.com, and today's topic is ethical hacking for Windows. We'll be joined by Hacking for Dummies author Kevin Beaver. Kevin is an information security consultant, author, speaker, and expert witness with Atlanta-based Principal Logic. He has over 21 years of experience in the field and specializes in performing independent security assessments. Kevin has authored several books on information security, and of course, he's been a longtime contributor to SearchWindowsServer.com. He's also the creator and author of the Security on Wheels audio programs and blog, which provides security learning for IT professionals on the go. Okay, so Kevin, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on, Brendan.
Okay, so we're talking about the book, Hacking for Dummies. This is the third edition. I believe it came out in January, is that right?
That's correct.
And when we're talking about hacking, we're not talking about, you know, like Swordfish, Super Spy kind of stuff. We're talking about ethical hacking,
correct.
What you guys call ethical hacking. Can you kind of give us a rundown of an idea of exactly what you mean by that?
Sure. Ethical hacking is basically an information security testing methodology. It's about using a malicious mindset and good hacking tools to find the security flaws in your systems before the bad guys exploit them. It involves looking at your networks, your operating systems, your databases, your applications, you know, wireless networks, passwords, and even less technical things like your IT operations could be part of the ethical hacking process. And furthermore, it can be done both from inside your network and outside your network. So really, the overall goal is to look at your systems from a hacker's point of view and find the things that are often overlooked when performing just basic security scans and higher level audits, things like that.
So what's the process like for just like a regular administrator who get this book and is interested in getting started? Like, what should they know, I guess?
Well, you don't have to know a whole lot about computers and a whole lot about networks to get started in the process. That said, the more you know about computers, the more you know about software, even if it's programming or databases or anything like that, and the more you understand networks and networking protocols, the easier ethical hacking and information security is going to be for you. If you just understand basic operating system concepts, you know, you log in, you understand the booting process, you understand password complexity and things like that, that's a start, and that's fine, and that's, you know, you can jump right into the ethical hacking process. And I sort of cover that methodology in the book where you can just sort of hit the ground running regardless of what you're looking at, because the when you look at it from a higher level perspective, the ethical hacking methodology, it's the same regardless of what you're looking at.
Now, who else is involved? Because audit and compliance staff are involved in this as well. So how is this different from, you know, just say like a regular security audit that we hear a lot about?
Yeah, you know, with a regular security audit, you may have internal audit staff. You may have an external accounting firm involved, maybe your compliance manager. But ethical hacking, there's a lot more people involved. It's everything from IT directors, system administrators, security managers, and of course compliance officers. Really, it's anybody and everybody that's responsible for information security and privacy in their business. And when you look at it, the broad spectrum of things beyond Windows, beyond the operating system, I mean, IT and information security touches practically every aspect of any given business. So you may have people in operations that are involved. You may have people in marketing or customer service that are involved. If you're a big enough organization and you have a physical security manager, you're going to want to get them involved, because ethical hacking incorporates that into the process as well. So it's, you know, really whether you're running the IT department or you're just serving on the team, there's really something in it for everyone.
Now let's get into some real world examples, because as we've established, you wrote the book on ethical hacking, Kevin. So see what I did there? You like that?
I like that.
Yeah, there you go. So let's talk about some real world stuff. In your experience performing some of these ethical hacking tests and security assessments, what have you seen as being like the big problems that are most often seen out there?
Well, yeah, I typically see a good mix of everything, and it's regardless of the size of the business or the government agency or the university or whatever, regardless of the size, regardless of the industry that they're in, regardless of what their compliance requirements may be, it's really the same stuff everywhere. So it's you know, there are always issues with IT and security operations. That's usually where things start, things like the lack of documentation, the lack of security standards, weak or non-existent processes around patch management, processes around security testing, and those things tend to trickle down to technical exploits, which you can really uncover using ethical hacking. I'll tell you what I'm seeing the most of is website and web application vulnerabilities. You know, every business has some type of web presence, and you wouldn't believe the oversights and the flaws that I'm seeing, you know, in these web basic websites, online banking, e-commerce applications, manufacturing applications, whatever. There is a ton of stuff out there, mainly, I think, because everybody has something out there, and it's exposed to the Internet. I also see a lot of mobile security weaknesses, you know, that things that people aren't doing a whole lot about, like unencrypted mobile drives on their laptops, smartphones that don't have good security controls, and so on. And interestingly enough, I've been seeing for a while a lot of Windows servers that are not current on their patches, sometimes dating back, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 years, which can easily facilitate an insider using a tool like Metasploit to gain full remote access to the system and do whatever they want to on the system.
Well, how can that? I mean, Microsoft, obviously we have Patch Tuesday every month. Like, why do you think so many organizations are so behind on their patches?
I think it's a couple of things. I think the first thing is that there are some gaps in any given patching process or patch management, or some people call it change management process. There are gaps in that, be it lack of documentation, lack of communication between team members, whatever the case may be. There's always something that falls through the cracks, that gets overlooked, that doesn't get pushed out. And I think, secondly, people don't want to patch their servers. You know, they've been burned. Almost all of us have been burned in the past by applying a patch. It crashes the server, or a certain application won't start, or whatever. And it's, you know, you've kind of learned the hard way that, well, maybe we shouldn't patch these systems or be so quick to patch these systems. And we need to test them at some point down the road, then we'll get to it. But that's kind of the odd thing about servers, is that all the workstations are almost always secure because they turn on automatic updates, but people just aren't doing it on their servers, and they're obviously overlooking stuff. So the interesting thing that I'm seeing, Brendan, is a lot of the Windows servers, whether they're using WSUS or some third-party patch management program, they're still missing some key patches, like I said, dating back several years, and it's either the people, that you know, the IT personnel are overlooking these patches, or the patch management system is overlooking these patches, and it's one of those things that'll come back and bite you if you don't get a hold of it.
Now, I sort of took you off your train of thought because we were talking about some of the things that you see most often. Now, as far as hacking ties into this, ethical hacking ties into this, and security assessments, so this is something that you found a lot of as a part of doing that sort of testing, you said, right?
Correct.
Right, okay. So now let's talk a little bit about tools. IT professionals love tools, the latest utilities, especially free ones. What are some of the best tools out there as far as ethical hacking goes?
Well, yeah, a big part of ethical hacking depends on the quality and the quantity of tools that you use. You're going to need good web application vulnerability scanners. You're going to need good network and OS level vulnerability scanners. An exploit tool is going to come in handy, like Metasploit. Password crackers, network analyzers, things like that. The thing is, you need to look for both free and commercial products. I know IT professionals, they tend to like the free stuff because they can never get the budget or justify the budget to buy the commercial products. But I tell you, in almost all of the situations, there are several exceptions, but in almost every situation, you're going to get what you pay for. It's interesting. I just saw a recent review of Hacking for Dummies, the third edition, and the guy mentioned that I tended to focus too much on the commercial tools and not enough on the free ones. Well, I've been doing this long enough to see the difference between the free and the commercial tools, and I'm sorry, in most situations, the freebies can't hold a candle to the commercial products. You know, the commercial tools, they find more stuff, they're easier to use, they're more current, they tend to be more stable, they have better reporting, and in most situations, you're going to get better support. So you kind of have to step back and think about how you want to approach this, but I feel pretty strongly about you get what you pay for, but really at the end of the day, what you have to do is find the right tool for the task. You know, don't just go buy all commercial products and assume that's all that you need. You need to step back, ask yourself, what am I trying to accomplish here? What is going to be the best tool for this specific task? And most importantly, you have to remember that there is no one best tool. You know, you've got to use multiple tools. I use multiple vulnerability scanners for the OS and for especially for web applications, and they almost always find different things. It's a really interesting situation, but it's reality.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, I think it's just human nature, though. People are going to, if there's free tools and they have commercial products available to choose from, they'll probably try the free one first and see
right.
what it can do. And if it does, if it turns out, you know, it's just not hacking it, no pun intended, they'll end up going towards the, end up buying it after the fact. But, so you find, I mean, you used them all then. I mean, I'm not them all,
well,
but you've used a lot of them.
I'm not going to say that I've used them all, but I've used a lot of them. I go back to, you know, using the Backtrack CD, the bootable CD that has all these really cool Linux-based freeware open source security tools, and I still go back to it time and again and try to use it for, you know, niche purposes, just to find a little nugget on a particular system, and sometimes they work, but other times they don't. I'm like, man, I'm just continuously let down, and I'm always going back to the commercial products.
Well, before we let you go, I just want to ask you one more question. Just anything we've left out, if there's like one piece of information or one word of advice that you'd give people as far as getting the most out of their, you know, security testing efforts, what would it be?
I think, you know, whether you call it ethical hacking, whether you call it vulnerability assessment, security audits, penetration testing, or whatever, just make sure that you have a solid methodology in place. Understand the process that does work, the whole ethical hacking methodology that I cover in Hacking for Dummies, and stick with it. And that consists of, you know, plan your testing out, do your testing, report on your findings, fix the stuff that matters, and then do it all over again. It's a continual process, and if you do it right, you can't fail.
Well, great. Well, thanks again, Kevin. So the book came out in January. It's available now. You can get it from the Wiley website, right? Is it on Amazon, too?
It's on Amazon as well. Yep.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you very much. And are we going to do a giveaway for this?
Yes, sir.
All right. We're going to do a giveaway. So I think what we're going to do is we're going to do a little tip contest. And whoever of our readers sends in the best Windows Server security tip, and it doesn't have to be long, just a little thing that you found useful, we'll figure out which one the best one is. And the winner will get a free edition of Hacking for Dummies, third edition by Kevin Beaver. How's that sound?
Yep. And I'll put my signature on it so it'll decrease its value.
Oh, there you go. Well, thanks very much again for taking the time to talk to us, and we'll be talking to you again soon, I hope.
Thanks a lot, Brendan.
That concludes today's podcast. Remember, once again, you can submit your best Windows Server security tip to editor@searchwindowsserver.com for your chance to win a free autographed copy of Hacking for Dummies, third edition by Kevin Beaver. And of course, in the meantime, be sure to check out searchwindowsserver.com for all the latest news and expert advice in the world of Windows. I'm Brendan Conoyer. Thanks for listening and have a great day.